eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome to Inside the Tunnel, brought to you by VT Scoop 24/7 Sports. My name is Andrew Alex. No Evan G. Watkins once again today, but the rest of the cast of characters right here with me. Doug Bowman, but taste this. How we doing, gentlemen?
I'm good. I guess we'll get Evan on for recruiting update at some point. You know, at some point, but first spring day here in Richmond, Virginia. Spent a little time out at the golf course working on my putting game. Did some lag putting. Didn't get better at that. Did some downhill putting. Didn't get better at that. And did some uphill putting. Also didn't get better at that. So it was a good productive, you know, just getting the putting stroke dialed back in.
You got out there, and that's what's important.
Me and every single other person you could imagine was out there. Range was full. Chipping green was full. Everybody working on their games there at Belmont Golf Club, a new sponsor of the pod.
Absolutely. I think, like, I don't know what the weather is down there in Richmond. It's like 65 up here, but it's like same thing. Everyone's out and about. We got a lot of great things coming up. We got March Madness around the corner. We have NFL free agency, which, to quote the great Jim Valvano, I thought about, you know, as a Packers fan, a backfield with Josh Jacobs and Aaron Jones. Then I cried once Aaron Jones left for the Vikings. And, you know, I laughed in between at the rest of the league when I thought we had the two greatest running backs in the league. So I had a full day. I had a perfect day.
But how about the Vikings picking up the best kicker in free agency? I think it was the Vikings, right? John Parker Romo.
Oh, shout out JPR.
I think he got a 2-year deal too. Hey, he's
2 years, $0 guaranteed for John Parker.
Hope he makes it a couple weeks.
I've noticed that, like,
we won't even pay for your flight here.
Contracts in the NFL just don't matter, but
no,
it's like, every year's a void year, like the Taysom Hill contracts. But for JPR's sake, I hope that's like 2 years fully guaranteed.
Unlikely.
I hope so too.
I hope
highly,
so.
Highly doubt it.
That would be a bold move from the Vikings to give a guaranteed contract to the kicker that hasn't attempted an NFL kick yet.
Special teams you.
It is special teams you. So I guess we'll kind of get right down to it. For those of you that were with us, did you guys hear that?
Something weird.
Just a fucking ghost motorcycle.
Oh.
I guess we'll just get right down to it. For those of you who were with us last week, Doug, Matei, and myself did what could only be described as the internet's most comprehensive breakdown of second string positional battles within the Hokies offense heading into spring practice. The feedback we got was nothing short of tremendous. So we had to come back and do a little bit more. Finish the job. Defensive side of the ball this time around. Some new faces, some familiar faces. It's a room for improvement, whether it be development or a plug and play, depending on the situation. Either way, for a Hokies defense that had moments where it looked like one of the best units in the league, and others where you could probably say not so much. It's an interesting year, and a year where they're going to be relying on this group big time to supplement what seems to be a pretty sure thing with the skill guys coming back on the offensive side of the ball. So let's start with the defensive line. Doug, the first thing as I was doing my mental preparation for this podcast that came to mind for me was a comparison that you drew maybe back in November, December, when we were already doing these spring practice previews when there were still like four or five games left to be played. And I believe you said this was almost a 2018-esque year for the defensive front. They got their guy, a couple of guys, notably Aeneas Peebles. Talk about this unit. You know, you felt shaky going into the offseason, losing Pollard and the rest of them. Fuga does return. You add Peebles, some help on the edge. Are we calling this group a liability anymore? Or is it even a strength?
I would lean further towards the strength. It took me a little bit to catch up on your 2018 analogy, but I believe I was referring to the lack of defensive tackle depth that Tech was going into in that year. And that was the year they took Deshaun Crawford out of the JUCO, also Jaden Cunningham, and then Pollard and Kendricks came in and played right away, and they and Jared Hewitt developed a little bit, and they kind of went from a big question mark to like a full four-man rotation there at defensive tackle. It wouldn't have been like that if Pollard and Kendricks hadn't come in ready to play. So Tech got a little lucky there. I think they're in better shape entering this season. Peebles is a headliner in every sense, one of the top defensive tackles in the conference last year at Duke, basically just added one of the best defensive players in the ACC to your own lineup. Huge get for them, and a kind of a bell cow type guy at defensive tackle. Pair him with Powell Ryland at defensive end. I think you feel really good about Tech's starting group in terms of high-end talent, which is quite a drastic change of where we were 12 months ago or 14 months ago before they got APR. I think you bring back Cole Nelson, who really developed at the end of last year, and then you've got this trio of defensive tackles you're going to sort through to find a second starter among Josh Fuga, Kamari Copeland, and Kelvin Gilliam. Like, I think they're in great shape at least at the top of the defensive line. And I would say probably also at the second level, where if one of those three defensive tackles starts, two of them are the backups. They have five defensive ends they feel really good about. Keyshawn Burgos is a guy to watch. A true junior. There's a couple other juniors that are like CJ McCray is somehow also a junior, listed on Hokie Sports same year as Burgos. But I feel like Burgos has a lot of untapped potential. So like, I would call it pretty close to a strength for Virginia Tech in terms of two of your best defenders in terms of pure talent with APR and Peebles, and then plenty of experience depth from Fuga to Nelson to Burgos to McCray. So I think there's a lot of potential and a lot of hope, and for good reason. At least on the defensive line, I think there's some questions like deeper down that are like 2025 questions. But like, if you're looking ahead to 2024, you feel pretty darn good.
I think also, like, you look at defensive tackle specifically, I think Aeneas Peebles, like, no disrespect to Pollard or Kendricks, but to me, that's an upgrade of talent at the position, especially for him. I think, you know, if you really want to nitpick it, like, I feel really good about defensive end. You basically bring back everyone. You hope that some guys like a Cole Nelson is developing a little bit more. We've heard great things in offseason workouts about Keyshawn Burgos. You still have guys like CJ McCray, Jordan McDonald, who could be in the mix. And so I feel really good at defensive end. I don't have a lot of complaints there. I think defensive tackle wise, like if everyone stays healthy, your top end group looks great. I think last year, and again, this is really nitpicking, but a guy like Fildarius Payne like was such a big boost to the group as the number three guy. Whether it was him, Kendricks, or Fuga, like they really like to rotate those four guys. And right now, like obviously Kamari Copeland looks really good, but he's coming out of the JUCO ranks, right? Like he's probably 275, needs to hit the weight room a little bit, get adjusted to Division I football. And then Kelvin Gilliam, a great talent, played at Oklahoma, but played in more of a reserve role. So I think like Gilliam is your guy to kind of, many people are projecting him over Fuga to be that starter guy. Like we'll see how that battle shakes out. But if one of those two guys can really develop into a Fildarius Payne type of, you know, impact, I'm not saying have like an 88 plus PFF grade, but really find some, you know, develop those two guys into bigger roles so that you can go four deep. Like, I think that's my only concern with this group, because after that, it really drops off. You have Wilfred Penei, who obviously has been around for a while, you know, Malachi Madison, Gunnar Givens, who I don't even think we've seen more than two snaps of. So, you know, you really like they did a great job of hitting most positions out of the portal, especially last year. So you're kind of hoping for that same success rate heading into next season, so that specifically at defensive tackle, you can rely on four guys there.
I think the second starting defensive tackle spot is probably one of like four or five starting spots on the defense that you're a little questionable on, in terms of, you know, like Fuga's played a ton. Copeland, a JUCO guy, Gilliam played like barely at Oklahoma. Like there may be a weakness there in terms of talent level of compared to the other three spots on the defensive line. But I also feel like with those three options, assuming Peebles is the number one, like you're probably going to find one of them that is a definite like starter quality guy. And then I think he touched on the down the depth chart battle, Matei, of Madison and Givens trying to unseat Penei as the fifth defensive tackle. Like that absolutely has to happen this offseason, because they need Penei as a redshirt senior, that they need to find somebody that they feel decent about for 2025. And even if it means like Malachi Madison looks to be capable of being the number three defensive tackle next year, and his like, you know, 75 snaps he'll get this year, I guess, you know, that's really what you're hoping for. I think down the line is that Madison or Givens or even Andrew Hanchuk, like kind of finally unseats Penei, as the emergency option at defensive tackle.
In terms of Gunnar Givens, if he can't unseat Penei this offseason, is it time to reconsider positions?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's tough with him because, like, what he will be, I believe, a redshirt sophomore by next year. So, like, you've already had this experiment for a couple years on the defensive side of the ball, and then he has to readjust to playing, you know, on the offensive line, where, you know, at minimum, if he switches over, he's the eighth or ninth or tenth guy for next year. And that all has to happen this spring. So it's tough because, like, this was obviously someone that many fans were very hyped on, a very highly rated recruit. Like it's almost a little too late. Like you need to absolutely make that decision right now, because if you wait any longer, like he's not going to crack it at either position.
Yeah. I think he would be, if he doesn't like flash the spring and like give him confidence that he's making progress at defensive tackle, I think he's more likely to transfer than end up on the offensive line at Virginia Tech. For him to flip over and immediately have success and unseat like or get past like Johnny Garrett, who's having a great offseason by Evans reporting, and like has practiced at the offensive line for 3 years now, or will have. Like, that's going to be a tough challenge if he doesn't, you know, if he doesn't get it done this spring on the defensive side. Like I like Mateo was saying, it's you're jumping into the fray with what has quickly become one of Tech's like deepest positions from top to bottom. We talked about it last week of they're going like 8-9 deep, and you know, they like Leif Ganim enough to play him a smidge as a true freshman last year. Like, I just, it seems like, I guess we're getting a preview. We'll get a preview of it with Lamar Law flipping over there. But I just don't know how likely that is if the defensive line doesn't work out for Givens. I don't know how likely it is that it's going to be much different on the offensive side of the ball.
Now I want to move to the linebacker position. A year ago today, we were probably saying one name and one name only in this conversation. And that name was Stone Snyder. And that name never ended up playing a snap for Virginia Tech. Between development and some transfer portal additions, a position that, you know, you could have been a hater on Dax in 2022, but at times, especially early on, you missed him in 2023. Maybe the Hokies can get that linebacker group back to that level. How do you see it shaking out?
So the news today that Kelly Lawson is going to miss the spring. He had a procedure in the offseason. He's not practicing this spring. Is a significant one. Clearly has all the physical traits that you could possibly want in a linebacker. Needed to add on a little bit more weight, and he presumably can't do that if he's recovering. And he needed to just get better on the field. I think, you know, last season he played more and more as 2022 went on, but 2023 was like his first full season as a starter. So it wasn't that surprising that he struggled, and he really could have used the spring to kind of finish out his development cycle. So that's a big loss for Virginia Tech there at that Sam linebacker spot. I think it opens up a big opportunity for Jaden Keller and Jaden McDonald, who McDonald in particular was playing a lot towards the end of last year, should get all of the reps. We talked about like Bashal Tootin probably shouldn't play much. Jalen Lane practice much this spring. Jalen Lane shouldn't practice much this spring. You could probably throw APR into that boat. There's a lot of number one guys on Tech's depth chart that are pretty fairly set. That linebacker spot is not one of them. Both linebacker and Mike are both the Sam and the Mike spots are two of the four or five spots I mentioned, along with the second defensive tackle, that are still up in the air and have more questions than answers. We'll see if Sam Brumfield at Mike is ready. They recruited him to step in right away and be the starter. So he's got to prove that and pick up the defense and do all that stuff. So, you know, with Lawson's injury, I think the best case scenario is that you leave the spring with Brumfield and McDonald as your true bona fide starters. No question about it. They probably ideally spent most of the spring playing together as a tandem with the ones. I think that's probably your best case scenario. Caleb Woodson sounds like he's going to play some at flip between Sam and Star. So, you know, he's a guy that played a lot last year who could get in the mix too, but I definitely think it's a McDonald Brumfield pairing as the leader in the clubhouse right now. And in terms of like, if I could map out the perfect spring for the linebackers, it would be like those two solidifying their starting roles.
Yeah, I think if we're, you know, I completely agree about McDonald and Brumfield. Like, again, kind of how I was speaking about the defensive tackles, like, we're mainly operating on the assumption that, like, last year, how the Virginia Tech coaching staff was able to pick out these guys from the portal, instantly plug and play. Like, you kind of have to hope that for this iteration of the Virginia Tech defense. And, like, additionally, last year, I think the biggest question, spring, summer, even into the season, was the offensive line. Like, I think the linebackers are creeping up there. Like, I'm not ready to give the offensive line like completely off the hook, but I think in terms of there's a lot of shuffling going around at linebacker. They did it in season. It looks like it's happening again this spring, which is fine. That's the time you're supposed to do that. You clearly have the talent there, but like, we saw some good things from Kelly Lawson. Obviously, he's out for the spring, but then we saw some really bad things from Kelly Lawson. Like, there hasn't been a ton of development there. We've harped on the fact that you basically have three linebacking coaches on staff. You have Bud Foster down the road. Like, it's time to kind of figure some things out. Like, absolutely, Sam Brumfield has to figure it out at Mike. That was the biggest issue of the defense last year. It sounds like McDonald, you know, he was separating from Kelly Lawson. Now he has his chance to fully cement that and stay atop the depth chart. And then really at star, like, it helps that you get a guy like Keontae Jenkins back to kind of help out in that role. Like, Cole Woodson could play there. You can move some guys around. But I think, like, the biggest thing for this spring is that consistency. Like, having guys atop the depth chart, not going into week three, week four with rotating guys throughout the entire game, like at a 50-50 snap split. So I'm mainly this linebacker group, like talent wise, I feel pretty good about development, wait to be seen. And then ultimately, like, I think you just want to have guys that are remaining atop the depth chart.
I've talked about the four or five spots on the defense of like that are a little bit of question marks. I think there are two spots that could be like disasters if they don't pan out for Virginia Tech that could just like throw the defense off the rails. One of them is Mike. We saw it last year with Tech struggles there, rotating Tisdale and Keller and Will Johnson and McDonald and George Balance for a while, for like four plays. It just wasn't there. They weren't good enough at that spot. And if Brumfield's not it, I really don't know who else would be it at this point. Maybe Asen Stevens gets in there, former podcast guest Asen Stevens. I don't know. I think that's one spot where, like, if he's not as good as Tech hopes he is, and there's definitely that possibility. He didn't start the year as a starter last year at Middle Tennessee State. Despite being coached by Rick Stockstill, he is still moving up a level, a significant level, and is like Tech is asking him to come play at a top half of the ACC level. Like, that's a big leap. I know Tech has gotten right with like Lane and Felton and Tootin, but like law of averages says that's not always going to pan out completely. So I think that's one of the two big, the other one safety, but two big spots of like, if that doesn't go well, like I think Tech could survive at defensive tackle with like a decent Josh Fuga. I think Tech could survive at even the Sam's linebacker spot with like Kelly Lawson and McDonald, like they were basically doing last year. But like, if Mike's a disaster, like the whole season's up in the air.
Well, on the bright side, you do still have George Balance on that roster if you need to turn to him. But Doug, you mentioned safety. There seems to be some risk there. What's your take on the position?
Big risk. I think, is Jalen Schroman healthy this spring?
By all accounts, yes.
All right, so he's one starter. The other spot is just a complete question mark. Jalen Jones, Mose Phillips are the competitors right now for that spot. I threw out Keontae Jenkins as a possible move, slide him back in the offseason. It doesn't seem like that's happening. So Tech's kind of just rolling, hoping for development out of Jones and Phillips. Maybe they'll take a portal guy after the spring, but that's like, you know, it's a bigger question mark than Brumfield at Mike, I think. And we saw what happens last year when Tech's safeties aren't fitting the run correctly. So that's the one spot where it was a little surprising to me. They did not take a safety out of the portal just to throw another experienced guy into the mix there with Jones and Jones and Mos Phillips, but yeah, I mean, your guess is good as mine on what's going to happen there. We might go through 15 spring practices. They might talk about the progress that Jalen Jones and Mos Phillips are making, and then they'll go out and they're at a transfer portal immediately after this. I don't know. But that's definitely the one spot on the defense that's the biggest question mark on the defense.
Yeah. And it's funny, 'cause like you look outside, and I know we'll get to the rest of like the secondary, you feel really good about the secondary. Otherwise, it's that one position that is the biggest concern on this team. And, you know, we talked about wish list last week about potentially adding a tight end, potentially adding, you know, an additional offensive lineman. Like, safety would be huge. And I know last year they experimented with a couple of things. They moved Mansoor Delane over. I don't think that's necessarily something you want to do for next year, you know, especially since he was allegedly tampered with. You don't like part of
allegedly. Your pitch,
allegedly, of course. you especially want him to be at his natural position, where you're getting him into a position to potentially enter the NFL, and that is at cornerback. So I'm really not sure what they do there. Like, the Jalen Jones experiment didn't look great to me. He obviously had a long leash there. They didn't have a lot of people. They had
nobody else.
They had nobody else. But, like, you know, what a career move for him, for someone that wasn't seeing a lot of time at wide receiver, to transfer over. Maybe he turns a corner this spring. Like, that's what you kind of have to hope for. But, and then Mos Phillips, you know, just coming off his true freshman year, like, that kind of tells you the story of, you know, what we saw last year. Like, we just talked about the Mike linebackers. Now we're talking about these two guys. Like, first 4 weeks of the season, it felt like every running back was going for over 200 yards, and primarily right down the middle of Virginia Tech's defense. So you really have to hope you figure it out there. Like, I don't know that there's a lot of position switches that they can do other than, you know, maybe moving Mansoor Delane there. Like, so you're really relying on them. And I think that's, you know, as Doug mentioned, very questionable. So I think it's, you hope for the best, you hope for some development. And then if it doesn't work out this spring, then you're shifting your priorities on potentially finding someone else in the transfer portal.
I think Phillips is a guy, is a true sophomore who enrolled early last year and played a ton in the fall, entering his second, you know, second calendar year as a college football player, second spring practice, going to go through summer for the second time, fall. Like, he's a guy that you would hope can make the proverbial leap in terms of development from, you know, he had some good moments last year. He struggled some, typical true freshman stuff, but like of him or Jones, I think he's the guy that you're eyeing as like, all right, the light was kind of flickering for him at the end of last year, and maybe it just goes fully on as a true sophomore and he becomes like a solid starter. I think we saw that with Jalen Stroman a little bit, not officially as a starter, but he got a lot of playing time his second year. I also wonder if this is a spot you could see some youth make a big move, a Cameron Fleming, or I know I just talked about true freshmen struggling, but a Quentin Reddish coming in as an early enrollee, of like, given the uncertainty around Phillips and Jones, like, maybe those two guys are just, you know, Reddish instantly better, or Fleming after a year, after he redshirted. So I think that's, like we said, just a massive position to watch all spring long, and just see where it shakes out.
Yeah, I'll put my money on the spring transfer portal. But that being said, no. I saw Caleb Farley play a lot as a freshman, and I didn't think he was very good at that time. But lo and behold, players who are thrust into positions that they might not necessarily deserve to be in, at least talent-wise compared to the competition, can develop and improve over time. And you just have to hope that you're seeing that from either Phillips or, of course, Jalen Jones, who you have to imagine the learning curve there. Particularly steep. But last position we're going to touch on, I know we are pressed for time today. Corners, defensive backs in general, outside of the safeties. Probably not too worried about that. Any outside battles or anything like that that you guys are focused on? we know who those top guys are going to be.
Go ahead.
I think when you look at the top guys, you feel really good there. Like, I don't know if Dorian Strong can replicate the year that he just had, at least like on a PFF basis. Like, it was one of the greatest statistical seasons from a cornerback in maybe even
the
history.
The second greatest behind Greg Stroman's 2017.
There we go. So I don't know if he can replicate that. I mean, certainly I think teams will not be targeting him as, you know, they'll try not to. Mansoor Delane, I think, as good of a season as he had 2 years ago, maybe you could argue he had a little bit of a regression last year. So really looking at him to come, you know, with all the alleged tampering and teams that wanted him, like, time to see if he can really step it up this next season. But I think in terms of the backup pool there, like, Braylon Johnson, I think, has gotten like a lot of love from the coaching staff. I think they were looking at him as someone that could play the nickel position. Like, we saw Dante Lovett, especially against like Boston College late in the season, you know, making some highlight plays there. I'm really excited about those two guys. Like, I think they'll be very good. And I'm, you know, we were kind of talking about it, I think, like a couple podcasts ago. So probably a couple months ago at this point, but like, you know, you would have loved to, why am I blanking on his name? Went to Cincinnati.
Derek Canteen.
You would love to have a guy like Derek Canteen back in the mix, but I think it also provides a great opportunity for those younger guys, Braylon Johnson and Dante Lovett, to really step into a key role, because you're going to lose Dorian Strong. You could potentially lose Mansoor Delane, and then you're going to need, you know, a passing of the torch, so to speak, there. And I think, like, it's always historically been at Virginia Tech, like, you get a young guy to play nickel, and then, you know, they get to the game sort of slows down for them, and then they're able to step into a larger role. And I think, you know, I'm excited to see whether it's Johnson or Lovett, like, either of them kind of step into that role and really see what they're made of.
Yeah, I think it's one of the positions you obviously feel the best about with Delane and Strong there. I think it's going to be an interesting one, because if I'm remembering right, it might have been Strong that Pry was talking about, but the feedback from the NFL was essentially like, you need to show you can play nickel if you want to really boost your stock. So I assume they're going to play him there a little bit or some. And I wouldn't be surprised if Delane is kind of in the same boat of like, we need to see some versatility out of you two. I'm particularly interested in Delane. Maybe we don't necessarily see it this spring, but I kind of feel like there is a little like Dorian Strong is getting more hype than I am kind of thing going there. It's a great spot for Virginia Tech to be in as far as those two pushing each other and motivating each other, along with the fact that there's like millions of dollars at stake for both of them. Like motivation is should not be an issue with either one of them going into this year. So I think that's interesting. Mate covered it with the third cornerback spot behind those two guys of Braylon Johnson, Dante Lovett. Anyone else that wants to get involved there is going to be interesting. It's probably a Johnson Lovett battle. I think they'll split. They'll play nickel and outside, just like we were saying with Tech probably playing Strong and Delane inside some. So I think it's a great spot to be in for Virginia Tech. I remember Brent Pry saying at the end of in August of last season that like Tech could not afford a defensive back to go down early in the season, and they all went down. And I think that's part of what slowed Delane down last year, was like, he was asked to like change positions on the fly in the middle of the season, in the middle of games, go back. Like, I think if they can stay healthy and really settle into some defined roles, or at least a consistent game plan for how they're going to play, I think they'll be in for a big year. And like Mate was saying, Derek Canteen's departure, and maybe they add a nickel safety type like we were talking about earlier out of the portal, but like Derek Canteen's departure kind of tees up this position for a perfect succession plan. If Braylon Johnson goes out and plays 300 snaps this year and like looks great and maybe has a pick or two and like you feel really good, like that's, again, there's going to be tons of holes on the 2025. There are tons of holes on the 2025 depth chart on both sides of the ball. But if you can like answer one, or potentially if Dante Lovett comes along, two, if you can answer the two cornerback spots with those guys, I think it would be huge for future Virginia Tech years. And they certainly looked the part in their limited duty last year in terms of like these guys, you know, but they always talk about Braylon Johnson as a coach's son, Dante Lovett coming from, he's a DeMatha kid, right? They were well prepared as true freshmen to come in and play right away. And I think kind of in the same vein as Mose Phillips, you're hoping for that proverbial leap as a true sophomore.
All right. That's going to wrap up the defensive spring practice preview. Briefly, I want to touch on hoops. Virginia Tech on the men's side finishes an even 10-10 in the ACC. They are pretty much on the outside looking in right now. I mean, they're like the 12th team out of the NCAA tournament per Joe Lunardi. Just had to include them on the list to keep fans interested. That being said, double-digit ACC wins is not something that always happens at Virginia Tech. I had an interesting question posed to me by a friend who I suppose was trying to be the devil's advocate. Is this Mike Young's best coaching job of his tenure? Did he do more with a roster that was always destined to achieve less? Doug, you were talking hot seat last week, so I'll start with you.
Still would probably side with the finish to the 2021 campaign. Everybody remembers the tournament run. They were frustratingly bad at the beginning of that year, and turned it around in the second half of the year. As far as best coaching job, I think I would still side with that one. But it was a good job. I still could go either way on whether you want to pull the plug or not. It would make sense on both sides to me. So, you know, I don't think they are, for reasons we covered last week. But like, you know, I think you did a pretty darn good job to get the 10-10. But there's still glaring holes in the roster. There's still problems with what has happened over the last 2 years that you have to acknowledge, while also like MJ Collins got a lot better at the end of the year. I think Tyler Nickel is a valuable role player type and can come back for another year. There's beginning to be like pieces of like, if you hit the portal correctly, this could be a pretty good team next year. I just can't get away from like, there's still the top end talent has not been filing in consistently. And that's what gets you to non-ACC or non-NCAA tournament seasons in a row.
I also look back to that 2021/2022 season. Like, some of the names are just blasts from the past, even though it was only what, like 3 years ago. It's like Cartier Diarra leaving.
Nope, I was thinking about him earlier. I was like,
Jara. Tyrese, yeah. Radford, Cordell Pimsoll, Jalen Cohn, like all those guys.
Jalen Cohn was on that team?
Well, he was not on that team because he left before the season. So you think about all the guys that left before the season, including, as I mentioned, Wabis Abidi. Like, they basically lost so much from that roster and then rebuilt it through Hunter Couture, obviously, Naheem Aline, Storm Murphy, you know, those types of guys, John Ogiako, Keve Aluma, Justin Mutz. I think that was his best coaching job. Like, obviously the tournament when they brought everything together and played their best basketball. But, you know, that season, I think they finished 11-9 in conference, over 20 wins that year. So they were a bit better non-conference, but still, to me, that's like the Mike Young effect. He was able to get the most out of everyone that he brought in, was able to set up his system. Like, shooting that year was great. Defensively, they were great. Yes, of course, they had some frustrating losses during the season, but to be able to do what they did in the tournament, I think was incredible and definitely a roster that overachieved compared to the talent that they were playing. So this year was, you know, a very weird year, like very in the middle about it. Obviously, you finished 10-10. Like, I don't know that they particularly looked great outside of like that Virginia game. But, you know, overall, it's just about, as we've been talking about, like, you got to find talent somewhere. Is it going to be Ryan Jones coming in next year and really making a mark in the front court? But certainly, I think, you know, he's bought himself some time.
I think the big problem this year was the defense. You lose Couture, who was your best on-ball defender. Mike Young would always talk about, when we start our game plan, we figure out who Couture is guarding, and that's how we begin. He wanted Collins to be in that role this year. I don't think he quite got there despite his improvement. So evaluating Mike Young, like, the defense is a big time problem. Looking at, they're 230th in the country right now in effective field goal percentage allowed. Like, the offense is fantastic. He's figured out how to scheme that together and get lots of open shots and all that stuff, but the defense is a big problem, and was the downfall, you know, giving up 75-80 points a game to Syracuse, Pittsburgh, North Carolina, like, over and over again. So, you know, I like we talked about last week, he gets another year for many, many reasons. I think that's fine. That's kind of where I am with it. I'm just kind of fine with it. And if they didn't give him another year, I'd be like, all right. So they just decided to go try somebody else. So that's where I am.
So just an interesting note. You mentioned Jalen Cohn earlier. I had no idea what he was doing with his life.
I looked him up too.
Didn't he almost have a record or something for,
you know, who he plays for, Matei?
Does he play professionally?
No, he's still in college.
He's not at Northern Arizona.
Correct. Not at Northern Arizona, a Power 5 football school.
Are we talking SEC or Big Ten?
ACC, actually.
What? Soon to be.
Okay, tell me. I can't guess.
He plays for Cal.
What? Oh, I did know that. I did know that.
13.2 points per game at Cal.
He's only shooting 31% from three, which I'm surprised about.
33% from the field. He's terribly inefficient and bad at defense. But
he's playing 35 minutes a night.
But getting that degree is terribly efficient. So
I think that's a stretch to say he's getting a Cal degree.
Regardless, that 13 and
transfer 18. Of credits,
but you definitely put it on the resume, right? Like,
yeah, of course.
Cal, yeah, Northern Virginia Tech.
I would put Cal, Virginia Tech, maybe, you know, a couple tab. Well, I don't know about Northern Arizona. No shade to them. If any of our listeners are from Northern Arizona, I deeply apologize.
I have a former coworker that is an alumni of Northern Arizona, and if he is any indicator, it is an academic institution of some sort.
There we go.
But yeah, Cal, 13-18, good enough to earn head coach Mark Madsen a 2-year extension through the year 2030, this being his first year with Cal. So remember the name Mark Madsen?
Isn't that the guy that was a power forward and, like, he was on the Lakers when they won the title, like, years ago?
Unreal trivia. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. You're right.
Like, he was going nuts at the parade. Wasn't that the clip?
Something like that, man. All right, last thing we'll touch on, women's hoops. We saw that Virginia Tech can win without Elizabeth Kittley. They can win one game. Saturday was a less optimal result. Hokies lose by about 30 points at the hands of Notre Dame. So imagine a scenario. I think Virginia Tech projects to be about a 4 seed right now. Can they make it to the Sweet 16? Say that Kittley comes back in the Sweet 16. Can they get to that point? Or would you bet against it?
I think I would bet against it at this time. They'd probably be playing the 5 seed in the second round. Helped at home, but playing a program at their level, basically, aka Notre Dame, who just smoked them. I think I would make them the underdog in that 4-5 matchup. So that's the two hopes are that Kittley comes back and is fine, or that, you know, they lost early. So they lost Saturday. They lost Saturday. So they gives Kenny Brooks 2 weeks essentially to figure out how to play without Kittley. Maybe they can figure something out over the next 2 weeks of, you know, how to run this thing efficiently, because it certainly wasn't that.
It's also, like, again, hyper speculation. The last time we spoke about it, we were modded. Doug has a full breakdown on VT Scoop of Liz Kittley's ACC Network interview, and judging by her body language, whether or not she was injured, it didn't look like she had any, you know, additional.
That's what you go back to, is like,
she's been remarkably composed. It doesn't look like she has a giant brace when she was sitting on the end of the bench. Not on crutches, was able to walk under her own power. So, like, I really don't know what this injury is. Like, it's
you
very
could read so much into it.
This is hyper speculation. Like, nobody knows. Nobody knows. Like, you'll hear things that it's season ending, she won't play again, which could be true, probably lean that way. But at the same time, like, based on what she's saying, who knows, right? This could all be for seeding, and then they'll announce that she's shut down for the year. But at the same time, like, there is a tiny little bit of hope that if she comes back in the second round, even at 50%, like, that might just be enough.
I'm kind of treating this like I have treated Virginia Tech recruiting blue chip football players, which is, I'm just going to assume they're not coming to Virginia Tech. And if they do, great. just going to assume they're losing that recruiting battle. That's how I'm going into this with Kittley. I'm going to assume she's done for the year. She comes back, great. I would like to be, I need the inside story on how quickly the women's basketball program in Virginia Tech coalesced around the secrecy about this injury. Like, it was immediate that they knew that they could not say anything about, like, they were as soon as after the game, no player said anything, no coach has said anything, hasn't leaked. Like, were they prepared for this in advance of, like, you know, if this happens, we immediately have to go on lockdown from an information perspective and can't let anything leak. It happened by the end of the UVA game, basically, where everyone fell in line and is on message and nobody knows anything. I think that's kind of impressive in this day and age. But also would be really interesting to hear of, like, was Kenny Brooks in the locker room after the UVA game? Like, all right, guys, because of NCAA seeding and because it may hurt our chance to host the first two games of the NCAA tournament, we can't say literally anything. So
if no flowers,
no nothing,
no well wishes.
And Liz, I need you to be normal and just act like you didn't just end your career or something like that. It's just kind of interesting.
The tea leaves are all over the place, but we'll wrap on that. I will say, folks, subscribe to vtscoop.com for Doug Bowman's exclusive subscriber article predictions surrounding the Hunter Couture Kendall Brooks wedding. All kinds of drama, something of a royal wedding in Virginia Tech lore. Doug Bowman's been all over it since the day. The all-time leader in three-pointers at Virginia Tech popped the question outside of the Virginia Tech basketball practice facility.
I think it's also Chloe Brooks. Want to get the right sister.
All right, VT Scoop, 24/7 Sports. Subscribe. We'll be back soon. Doug is going to have all of the spring practice updates for you. Either way, thanks for tuning in. As always, my friends, go Hokies.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.